Chapter 20. It would almost certainly be weeks before Cyverdon even had an audience date. In the meantime, we were living here, and I would have a chance to see how things stood, who might side with which Mia Na'ai if things came to an open breach, maybe even whether one Mia Na'ai or another was in ascendance here. Any information might prove crucial when the moment arrived, and it would arrive, I was increasingly sure. Anna and Miatna I might or might not realize what I was any time soon, but at this point there was no hiding me from the rest of herself. I was here, openly, noticeably, along with Cyverdon. Thinking of Cyverdon and Captain Vel Osk's eagerness to meet her, I thought also of Hundred Captain Rubren Osk, of Anna and Miatna I complaining she couldn't guess her opinion, could rely on neither her opposition nor her support. Nor could she pressure her in order to discover or compel it. Captain Rubren had been fortunate enough in her family connections to be able to take such a neutral stance, and keep it. Did that say something about the state of Miatna I's struggle with herself at the time? Did the captain of Mercy of Colour also take that neutral stance? Or had something changed in that balance during the time I had been gone? And what did it mean that Inspector Supervisor Skaya disliked her? I was certain dislike was the expression I had seen on her face when I had mentioned the name. Military ships weren't subject to dock authorities, except, of course, in the matter of arrivals and departures, and the relationship between the two usually involved some contempt on one side and mild resentment on the other, all covered over with guarded courtesy. But Skye at Orware had never been given to resentment, and besides, she knew both sides of the game. Had Captain Vel offended her personally? Did she merely dislike her, as happened sometimes? Or did her sympathies place her on the other side of some political dividing line? And after all, where was Skye at Orware likely to fall in a divided ratch? Unless something had happened to change her personality and opinions drastically, I thought I knew where Skye at Orware would land in that toss. Captain Vel, and for that matter Mercy of Colour, I didn't know well enough to say. As for Cyverdon, I was under no illusions as to where her sympathies would lie, given a choice between citizens who kept their proper places along with an expanding conquering ratch, or no more annexations and the elevation of citizens with the wrong accents and antecedents. I was under no illusions as to what Cyverdon's opinion of Lieutenant Orne would have been, had they ever met. The place where Captain Vel customarily took tea was not prominently marked. It didn't need to be. It was probably not at the very top of fashion and society, not unless Osk's fortunes had soared in the last 20 years, but it was still the sort of place that if you didn't already know it was there, you were almost certainly not welcome. The place was dark and the sound muffled. Rugs and hangings absorbed echoes or unwanted noises. Stepping in from the noisy corridor, it was as though I had suddenly put my hands over my ears. Groups of low chairs surrounded small tables. Captain Vel sat in one corner, flasks and bowls of tea and a half-empty tray of pastries on the table in front of her. The chairs were full, and an outer circle had been pulled around. They had been here for at least an hour. Cyverdon had said to me before we left the room, blandly, still irritated, that of course I wouldn't want to rush out to tea. If she'd been in a better mood, she would have told me straight out that I should arrive late. It had been my own inclination even before she spoke, so I said nothing and let her have the satisfaction of thinking she'd influenced me, if she wished to have it. Captain Vel saw me and rose, bowing.
Ah, Breck Gahiad, or is it Gahiad Breck?
I made my own bow in return, taking care that it was precisely as shallow as hers had been. In the Garantate we put our house names first. The Garantate didn't have houses the way Ratcha'i did, but it was the only term Ratcha'i had for a name that indicated family relationship. But I am not in the Garantate at the moment. Gahiad is my house name.
You've already put it in the right order for us, then, Captain Vel said, falsely jovial. Very thoughtful.
I couldn't see Cyverdon, who stood behind me. I wondered briefly what expression was on her face, and also why Captain Vel had invited me here, if her every interaction with me was going to be mildly insulting. Station was certainly watching me. It would see at least traces of my annoyance. Captain Vell would not, and likely would not care if she could have.
And Captain Syverdon Vendai,
Captain Vell continued, and made another bow, noticeably deeper than the one before.
An honour, sir, a distinct honour. Do sit.
She gestured to chairs near her own, and two elegantly attired and bejewelled Radjai rose to make way for us, no complaint or expression of resentment apparent.
Your pardon, Captain,
said Syverdon, bland. The correctives from the day before had come off, and she looked very nearly what she had been 1,000 years ago, the wealthy and arrogant daughter of a highly placed house. In a moment she would sneer and say something sarcastic, I was sure, but she didn't.
I no longer deserve the rank. I am the honoured Brex servant.
Slight stress on honoured, as though Captain Vell might be ignorant of the appropriate courtesy title, and Syverdon meant merely to politely and discreetly inform her.
And I thank you for the invitation she was good enough to convey to me.
There it was, a hint of disdain, though it was possible only someone who knew her well would hear it.
But I have duties to attend to.
I've given you the afternoon off, citizen, I said, before Captain Vell could answer. Spend it however you like. No reaction from Syverdon, and still I couldn't see her face. I took one of the seats cleared for us. A lieutenant had sat there previously, doubtless one of Captain Vell's officers. Though I saw more brown uniforms here than a small ship like Mercy of Calais could account for. The person next to me was a civilian in rose and azure, delicate satin gloves that suggested she never handled anything rougher or heavier than a bowl of tea, and an ostentatiously large brooch of woven and hammered gold wire set with sapphires, not, I was sure, glass. Likely the design advertised whatever wealthy house she belonged to, but I didn't recognize it. She leaned toward me and said loudly, as Syverdon took the seat opposite me,
"How fortunate you must have thought yourself to find Syverdon Vendai."
"Fortunate," I repeated carefully, as though the word were unfamiliar to me, leaning just slightly more heavily on my Garantate accent, almost wishing the Ratchai language concerned itself with gender so I could use it wrongly and sound even more foreign. Almost. "Is that the word for it?" I had guessed correctly why Captain Vell had approached me the way she had. Inspector Supervisor Skyart had done something similar, addressing Syverdon even though she knew Syverdon had come as my servant. Of course, the Inspector Supervisor had seen her mistake almost immediately. Across from me, Syverdon was explaining to Captain Vell about the situation with her aptitudes. I was astonished at her icy calm, given I knew she'd been angry ever since I told her I'd intended to come, but this was, in some ways, her natural habitat. If the sit that had found her suspension pod had brought her somewhere like this, instead of a small provincial station, things would have gone very differently for her.
"Ridiculous," exclaimed Rose and Azure beside me, while Captain Vell poured a bowl of tea and offered it to Syverdon. "As though you were a child, as though no one knew what you were suited for. It used to be you could depend on officials to handle things properly."
"Justly," rang the silent companion of that last word. "Beneficially."
"I did, citizen, lose my ship,"
Syverdon said.
"Not your fault, Captain," protested another civilian somewhere behind me. "Surely not." "Everything that happens on my watch is my fault, citizen," answered Syverdon.
Captain Vell gestured agreement.
"Still, there shouldn't have been any question of you taking the tests again."
Syverdon looked at her tea, looked over at me sitting empty-handed across from her, and set her bowl down on the table in front of her without drinking. Captain Vell poured a bowl and offered it to me, as though she hadn't noticed Syverdon's gesture.
"How do you find the ratch after 1,000 years, Captain?"
asked someone behind me as I accepted the tea.
"Much changed?"
Syverdon didn't retrieve her own bowl.
"Changed some. The same some."
"For the better or for the worse?"
"I could hardly say," replied Syverdon coolly.
"How beautifully you speak, Captain Syverdon,"
said someone else. So many young people these days are careless about their speech. It's lovely to hear someone speak with real refinement.
Cyberden's lips quirked in what might be taken for appreciation of a compliment, but almost certainly wasn't.
These lower houses and provincials with their accents and their slang,
agreed Captain Vell.
Really? My own ship, fine soldiers, but to hear them talk, you'd think they'd never gone to school.
Pure laziness, opined a lieutenant behind Cyverdon.
You don't have that with ancillaries,
said someone, possibly another captain behind me.
A lot of things you don't have with ancillaries,
said someone else, a comment that might be taken two ways, but I was fairly sure I knew which way was meant. But that's not a safe topic.
Not safe? I asked, all innocence. Surely it isn't illegal here to complain about young people these days?
How cruel. I had thought it a basic part of human nature, one of the few universally practiced human customs.
And surely,
added Cyverdon with a slight sneer, her mask finally cracking,
it's always safe to complain about lower houses and provincials.
You'd think,
said Rose and Azure beside me, mistaking Cyverdon's intent.
But we are sadly changed, Captain, from your day. It used to be you could depend on the aptitudes to send the right citizen to the right assignment. I can't fathom some of the decisions they make these days, and atheists given privileges.
She meant Valskaians, who were, as a rule, not atheists, but exclusive monotheists. The difference was invisible to many Ratchai.
And human soldiers. People nowadays are squeamish about ancillaries, but you don't see ancillaries drunk and puking on the concourse.
Cyverdon made a sympathetic noise.
I've never known officers to be puking drunk.
In your day, maybe not, answered someone behind me. Things have changed.
Rose and Azure tipped her head toward Captain Vell, who, to judge by her expression, had finally understood Cyverdon's words, as Rose and Azure had not.
Not to say, Captain, that you don't keep your ship in order, but you wouldn't have to keep ancillaries in order, would you?
Captain Vell waved the point away with an empty hand, her bowl of tea in the other.
That's command, citizen. It's just my job. But there are more serious issues. You can't fill troop carriers with humans. Human crewed justices are all half empty.
And of course, interjected Rose and Azure, those all have to be paid.
Captain Vell gestured assent.
They say we don't need them any more.
They, being of course Anna Anda Miatnai, no one would name her while being critical of her.
That our borders are proper as they are. I don't pretend to understand policy or politics, but it seems to me it's less wasteful to store ancillaries than to train and pay humans and rotate them in and out of storage.
They say,
said Rose and Azure beside me, taking a pastry from the table in front of her,
that if it hadn't been for Justice of Torren's disappearance, they'd have scrapped one of the other carriers by now.
My surprise at hearing my own name couldn't have been visible to anyone here, but surely Station could see it. And that surprise, that startlement, wasn't something that would fit into the identity I'd constructed. Station would be re-evaluating me, I was sure. So would Anna Anda Miatnai.
Ah, said a civilian behind me, but our visitor here is doubtless glad to hear our borders are fixed.
I barely turned my head to answer. The Garantate would be a very large mouthful. I kept my voice even. No one here could see my continuing consternation at that startlement moments ago, except, of course, Station and Anna Anda Miatnai. And Anna Anda Miatnai, or part of her at least, would have very good reason for noticing talk about Justice of Torren and reactions to it.
I don't know, Captain Cyverdon, Captain Vell was saying. If you've heard about the mutiny at Ime, an entire unit refused their orders and defected to an alien power.
Certainly wouldn't have happened on an ancillary crewed ship,
said someone behind Cyverdon.
Not too big a mouthful for the Ratch, I imagine,
said the person behind me.
I
Dare say. Again I leaned just slightly on my Garantate accent. Sharing a boarder with us this long, you've learned better table manners.
I refused to turn all the way around to see whether the answering silence was amused, indignant, or merely distracted by Cyverdon and Captain Vell. Tried not to think too hard about what conclusions Anna and Amiatna I would draw from my reaction to hearing my name.
I think I heard something about it, said Cyverdon, frowning thoughtfully. Ime. That was where the provincial governor and the captains of the ships in the system murdered and stole and sabotaged the ships and stations so they couldn't report to higher authorities. Yes?
No point worrying what station or the Lord of the Ratch would make of my reaction to that. It would fall where it fell. I needed to stay calm.
That's beside the point, answered Rose and Azure. The point is, it was mutiny. Mutiny winked at. But one can't make a plain statement of fact about the dangers of promoting the ill-bred and vulgar to positions of authority, or policies that encourage the most vile sort of behaviour, and even undermine everything civilization has always stood for, without losing business contacts or promotions.
You must be very brave, then, to speak so, I observed. But I was sure Rose and Azure wasn't particularly brave. She spoke as she did because she could do so without danger to herself.
Calm. I could control my breathing. Keep it smooth and regular. My skin was too dark to show a flush, but Station would see the temperature change. Station might just think I was angry about something. I had good reason to be angry.
Honored, Cyverdon said abruptly. From the set of her jaw and shoulders, she was suppressing an urge to cross her arms. Would be quite soon in one of those silently facing the wall moods.
We'll be late to our next engagement.
She rose, more abruptly than was strictly polite.
Indeed, I acknowledged, and set down my untasted tea. Hoped her action was on her own account and not because she'd seen any sign of my agitation.
Captain Vell, thank you for your very kind invitation. It was an honour to meet you all.
Out on the main concourse, Cyverdon, walking behind me, muttered,
Fucking snobs.
People passed, mostly not paying any attention to us. That was good. That was normal. I could feel my adrenaline levels dropping.
Better.
I stopped and turned to look at Cyverdon, raised an eyebrow.
Well, but they are snobs, she said. What do they think the aptitudes are for? The whole point is that anyone can test into anything.
I remembered 20 years younger Lieutenant Skyat asking, in the humid darkness of the upper city, if the aptitudes had lacked impartiality before or lacked them now, and answering for herself, both, and Lieutenant Orne's hurt and distress. Cyverdon crossed her arms, then uncrossed them, balled her gloved hands into fists.
And of course someone from a lower house is going to be ill-bred and have a vulgar accent. They can hardly help it.
And what were they thinking? Cyverdon continued. To have a conversation like that, in a tea shop, on a palace station.
I mean, not just when we were young and provincials are vulgar, but the aptitudes are corrupt. The military is badly mismanaged.
I didn't speak, but she answered as though I had.
Oh, of course everyone complains things are mismanaged, but not like that. What's going on?
Don't ask me. Though, of course, I knew. Or thought I did. And wondered again what it meant that Rose and Azure and others there had felt so freely able to speak as they had. Which Anna and Amiatna I might hold an advantage here. Though such free speaking might only mean the Lord of the Ratch preferred to let her enemies identify themselves clearly and unambiguously.
And have you always been in favour of the ill-bred, testing into high positions?
I asked, knowing she hadn't.
Realizing suddenly that if Station had never met anyone from the Garantate, Anna and Amiatna I very possibly had.
Why had that not occurred to me before? Something programmed into my ship mind, invisible to me until now, or just the limitations of this one small brain remaining to me? I might have deceived Station and everyone else here, but I had not for a moment deceived the Lord of the Ratch.
She had certainly known from the instant I set foot on the palace docks that I was not what I said I was. It would fall where it fell, I told myself.
I thought about what you told me. About Ime.
Cyvedon said, as though it answered my question, oblivious to my renewed distress.
I don't know if that unit leader did the right thing, but I don't know what the right thing to do would have been, and I don't know if I'd have had the courage to die for the right thing if I knew what it was. I mean...
She paused.
I mean, I'd like to think I would. There was a time I'd have been sure I would, but I can't even...
She trailed off, her voice shaking slightly. She seemed on the verge of breaking into tears like the Cyvedon of a year ago, nearly any feelings at all too raw for her to handle. That sustained politeness back in the tea shop must have been the result of considerable effort. I hadn't paid much attention to the people passing us as we walked, but now something struck me as wrong. I was suddenly aware of the location and direction of the people around us. Something indefinite troubled me. Something about the way certain people moved. At least four people were watching us, surreptitiously, had no doubt been following us, and I had not noticed until now. This had to be new, surely. I would have noticed if I'd been followed from the moment I'd stepped onto the docks. I was sure I would have. Station had certainly seen my startlement back in the tea shop, when Rose and Azure had said, "Justice of Torren." Station would certainly have wondered why I had reacted the way I had, would certainly have begun to watch me even more closely than it had been. Still, Station didn't need to have me followed to watch me. This was not merely observation. This was not Station. I had never been given to panic. I would not panic now. This throw was mine. And if I had miscalculated slightly the trajectory of one piece, I had not miscalculated the others. Keeping my voice very, very even, I said to Cyvedon, "We'll be early for the inspector supervisor."
"Do we have to go to that always?"
Cyvedon asked. "I think we should." Having said it, immediately wishing I hadn't, I didn't want to see Sky at Orwear, not now, not in this state.
"Maybe we shouldn't," said Cyvedon. "Maybe we should go back to the room. You can meditate or pray or whatever it is, and then we can have supper and listen to some music. I think that would be better."
She was worried about me. Clearly she was. And she was right. Back to the room would be better. I would have a chance to calm down to take stock. And Anna Ander Miatna I would have a chance to make me disappear with no one watching. No one the wiser. "The inspector supervisors," I said.
"Yes, honored,"
Cyvedon replied, subdued. Sky at Orwear's quarters were their own small maze of corridors and rooms. She lived there with a collection of dock inspectors and clients, and even clients of clients. She was certainly not Orwear's only presence here, and the house would have had its own quarters elsewhere on the station. But Skyat evidently preferred this arrangement. Eccentric, but that was expected of any Orwear. Though, as with so many Orwears, there was a practical edge to her eccentricity. We were very near the docks here. A servant admitted us, escorted us to a sitting room floored with blue and white stone, walled floor to ceiling with plants of all kinds, dark or light green, narrow-leaved or broad, trailing or upright, some flowering, spots and swathes here and there of white, red, purple, yellow. Likely they were the entire occupation of at least one member of this household. Dao Sait waited for us there, bowed low, seeming genuinely pleased to see us.
"Honored Brick, Citizen Cyvedon, Inspector Supervisor will be so pleased you've come. Do please sit."
She gestured to the chairs spread around. "Will you have tea, or are you full up? I know you had another engagement today." "Tea would be nice, thank you," I said. Neither I nor Cyvedon had actually drunk any at Captain Vell's gathering, but I didn't want to sit. All the chairs looked as though they'd impede my freedom of movement if I was attacked and had to defend myself.
"Breck, Cyvedon,
voice very quiet, concerned. She could see something was wrong, but she couldn't discreetly ask what it was. Dao Sate handed me a bowl of tea, smiling, to all appearances sincerely, oblivious it seemed to the state of tension I was in, which was so obvious to Cyverdon. How had I not recognized her the moment I'd seen her, not immediately identified her Orsian accent? How had I not realized I couldn't possibly deceive Anna and a Miatna'i for more than the smallest instant? I couldn't stand through this, not courteously. I would have to choose a seat. None of the available chairs was tenable, but I was more dangerous than nearly anyone here realized even sitting. I still had the gun, a reassuring pressure against my ribs under my jacket. I still had the attention of station, of all of Anna and a Miatna'i. Yes, and that was what I had wanted. This was still my game. It was. Choose a seat. The omens will fall where they fall. Before I could make myself sit, Skyat Orwe came into the room, as modestly jewelled as when she was working, but I'd seen the pale yellow fabric of her elegantly cut jacket on a bolt at that expensive clothier's shop. On her right sleeve cuff, that cheap, machine-stamped gold tag flashed. She bowed.
"Honoured Breck, Citizen Cyverdon, how good to see you both. I see Adjunct Sate has given you tea."
Cyverdon and I acknowledge this with polite gestures.
"Let me say before anyone else arrives that I'm hoping you'll both stay to supper."
"You tried to warn us yesterday, didn't you?"
asked Cyverdon. "Cyverdon," I began. Inspector Supervisor Skyat raised one elegantly yellow-gloved hand.
"It's all right, Honored. I knew Captain Vell prided herself on being old-fashioned, on knowing how much better things were when children respected their elders and good taste and refined manners were the rule. All familiar enough. I'm sure you heard such talk 1,000 years ago, Citizen."
Cyverdon gave a small acknowledging.
"I'm sure you heard all about how Ratcha'i have a duty to bring civilization to humanity, and that ancillaries are far more efficient for that purpose than human soldiers."
"Well, as to that," said Cyverdon, "I'd say they are."
"Of course you would."
Skyat showed a small flash of anger. Cyverdon probably couldn't see it, didn't know her well enough.
"You probably don't know, Citizen, that I commanded human troops during an annexation myself."
Cyverdon hadn't known that. Her surprise was obvious. I had known, of course. My lack of surprise would be obvious to station, to Anna and a Miatna'i. There was no point in worrying about it.
"It's true," Skyat continued, "that you don't have to pay ancillaries, and they never have personal problems. They do whatever you ask them to without any sort of complaint or comment, and they do it well and completely. And that wasn't true of my human troops. And most of my soldiers were good people, but it's so easy, isn't it, to decide the people you're fighting aren't really human, or maybe you have to do it to be able to kill them. People like Captain Vell love pointing out the atrocities that human troops have committed that ancillaries never would, as though making those ancillaries was not an atrocity in itself. They're more efficient, as I said."
In Oars, Skyat would have been sarcastic on this topic, but she spoke seriously, carefully and precisely.
"And if we're still expanding, we would have to still use them, because we couldn't do it with human soldiers, not for long, and we're built to expand. We've been expanding for more than 2,000 years, and to stop will mean completely changing what we are. Right now, most people don't see that, don't care, they won't, until it affects their lives directly, and for most people it doesn't yet. It's an abstract question, except to people like Captain Vell."
"But Captain Vell's opinion is meaningless," said Cyverdon. "So is anyone else's. The Lord of the Ratch has decided for whatever reason, and it's foolish to go around saying anything against it."
"She might decide otherwise, if persuaded,"
answered Skyat. All of us still standing. I was too tense to sit, Cyverdon too agitated, Skyat, I thought, angry. Dao Sate, standing frozen, trying to pretend she wasn't hearing any of this.
Or the decision might be a sign that the Lord of the Ratch has been corrupted in some way.
Captain Vell's sort certainly doesn't approve of all the talking with aliens we've been doing. The Ratch has always stood for civilization, and civilization has always meant pure, uncorrupted humanity. Actually dealing with non-humans instead of just killing them can't be good for us.
Is that what the business at Ime was about?
Asked Cyverdon, who had clearly spent our walk here thinking about this.
Someone decided to set up a base and stockpile ancillaries and what?
Force the issue.
You're talking about rebellion, treason. Why would anyone be talking about something like that now? Unless when they got the people responsible for Ime, they didn't get everyone. And now they're letting a few people put their heads up and make some noise, and once they think everyone involved has identified themselves...
She was openly angry now. It was a fairly good guess. It might well be more or less right, depending on which Anaander had the upper hand here.
Why didn't you warn us?
I tried, citizen. But I ought to have spoken more directly. Even so, I wasn't sure Captain Vell had gone so far. All I knew was that she idealized the past in a way I can't agree with. The noblest, most well-intentioned people in the world can't make annexations a good thing. Arguing that ancillaries are efficient and convenient is not, to me, a point in favour of using ancillaries. It doesn't make it better, it only makes it look a little cleaner.
And that only if you ignored what ancillaries were to begin with.
Tell me,
I almost said, tell me, Lieutenant, but caught myself in time.
Tell me, Inspector Supervisor, what happens to the people waiting to be made into ancillaries?
Some are still in storage or on troop carriers, Skyat said. But most have been destroyed.
Well, that makes it all better then, I said, seriously, evenly.
Orware was against it from the start, said Skyat.
She meant the continual expansion, not any expansion at all. And the Ratch had used ancillaries long before Anaander Myatnai had made herself into what she was. There just hadn't been quite so many of them.
Orware's lords have said so to the Lord of the Ratch repeatedly.
But the lords of Orware have not refused to profit from it. I kept my voice even, pleasant.
It's so easy to go along with things, isn't it?
Skyat said.
Especially when, as you say, it profits you.
She frowned then, and cocked her head slightly, listened a few seconds to something only she could hear, looked questioningly at me, at Cyverdon.
Station security is at the door. Asking for Citizen Cyverdon.
Asking was certainly more polite than the reality.
Excuse me a moment.
She stepped into the corridor, followed by Dao Sate. Cyverdon looked at me oddly calm.
I'm beginning to wish I was still frozen in my escape pod.
I smiled, but apparently it didn't convince her.
You all right? You haven't been all right since we left that Vell Osk person. Damn Skyat Orware for not speaking more directly. Usually you can't get an Orware to stop saying unpleasant things. She picks now to be discreet.
I'm fine, I lied. As I spoke, Skyat returned with a citizen in the light brown of station security, who bowed and said to Cyverdon,
Citizen, will you and this person come with me?
The courtesy was, of course, merely a form. One didn't refuse station security's invitations. Even if we tried, there were reinforcements outside, placed there to make sure we didn't refuse. They wouldn't be station security, those people who had followed us from Captain Vell's meeting. They would be special missions, or even Anaander Myatnai's own guard. The Lord of the Ratch had put all the pieces together and decided to remove me before I could do any serious damage. But it was almost certainly too late for that. All of her was paying attention. The fact that she'd sent station security to arrest me and not some special missions officer to kill me quickly and quietly told me that.
Of course,
Cyverdon answered, all calm courtesy. Of course.
She knew she was innocent of any wrongdoing. She was sure I was special missions and working for Anna Ander herself. Why should she worry? But I knew that finally the moment had come. The omens that had been in the air for 20 years were about to come down and show me. Show Anna Ander Miatna'ai what pattern they made. This security officer didn't even twitch an eyebrow as she answered, "The Lord of the Ratch wishes to speak with you privately, citizen." Not a glance at me. She likely didn't know why she'd been sent to escort us to the Lord of the Ratch, didn't realize I was dangerous, that she needed the backup that awaited us out in the station's corridors, if she even knew it was there. The gun still sat under my jacket, and extra magazines tucked here and there wherever the bulge wouldn't show. Anna Ander Miatna'ai almost certainly didn't know what I intended.
"Is this my audience I requested, then?" asked Cyverdon.
The security officer gestured ambiguity.
"I couldn't say, citizen."
Anna Ander Miatna'ai couldn't have known my object in coming, knew only that I had disappeared some 20 years ago. Part of her might know that she'd been aboard my last voyage, but none of her could know what had happened after I'd gated out of Shisona's system.
"I did ask," said Inspector Supervisor Skyat, "if you might have tea and supper first."
The fact she'd asked said something about her relationship with security. The fact she'd been refused said something about the urgency behind this arrest. It was an arrest, I was sure. Security, oblivious, made an apologetic gesture.
"My orders, Inspector Supervisor. Citizen?"
"Of course," said Skyat,
smooth and unruffled. But I knew her, heard worry hidden in her voice.
"Citizen Cyverdon, honored Breck. If there's any assistance I can provide, please, don't hesitate to call on me."
"Thank you, Inspector Supervisor," I said, and bowed. My fear and uncertainty, my near panic, drained away. The omen stillness had flipped, become movement, and justice was about to land before me, clear and unambiguous. The security officer escorted us not to the main entrance of the palace proper, but into the temple, quiet at this hour when many people were visiting or sitting home with family and a bowl of tea. A young priest sat behind the now half-empty baskets of flowers, bored and sullen. She gave us a resentful glance as we entered, but didn't even turn her head as we passed. We went through the main hall, four-armed Amaat looming, the air still smelling of incense and the heap of flowers at the god's feet and knees, back to a tiny chapel tucked into a corner, dedicated to an old and now obscure provincial god, one of those personifications of abstract concepts so many pantheons hold, in this case a deification of legitimate political authority. No doubt when the palace had been built, there had been no question of this god's placement next to Amaat, but she seemed to have fallen out of favour, the demographic of the station or perhaps just fashion having changed, or perhaps something more ominous had caused it. In the wall behind the image of the god, a panel slid open. Behind it, an armed and armoured guard, her weapon holstered, but not far from her hand, silver-smooth armour covering her face. Ancillary, I thought, but there was no way to be sure. I wondered, as I had occasionally over the past 20 years, how that worked. Surely the palace proper wasn't guarded by station. Were Anna Ander Miatna'ai's guards just another part of herself? Cyverdon looked at me, irritated, and I thought a bit afraid.
"I didn't think I rated the secret entrance."
Though it probably wasn't all that secret, just slightly less public than the one outside on the concourse. The security officer made that ambiguous gesture again, but said nothing.
"Well,"
I said, and Cyverdon gave me an expectant look. Clearly she thought this was due to whatever special status she had decided I had. I stepped through the door, past the unmoving guard, who didn't acknowledge me at all, nor Cyverdon coming behind me. The panel slid shut behind us.